Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Kevin Moore Show. I'm Kevin Moore, and it is a pleasure to be spending the next hour with you. Our opening musical selection was Promises, Promises, a wonderful song from the great composer Burt Bacharach. And that's what I have for all of you today, the promise that this next hour will be informative, interesting, provocative, and maybe even a little exciting. A promise that our discussions will give you something to think about today and hopefully something to talk about tomorrow. Or what I'd like to think of as a civilized hour of culture and conversation. Well, as I like to do to begin each of our shows, I like to read or share a recent poignant story, an especially interesting essay, or some philosophical quotes or thoughts, or sometimes even a little poetry that touches or speaks to us all. And hoping that everyone had a safe Halloween and trick-or-treating for the kids and so forth. I thought I'd read a little story which comes about every year this time in the Chicago Tribune, written and illustrated by a gentleman by the name of John T. McCutcheon. Well, John T. McCutcheon was considered the dean of American cartoonists. He's a graduate of Purdue University and won the Pulitzer Prize for cartoons in 1932. Usually runs around Halloween or usually a little bit thereafter. And it was first published in the Chicago Tribune in 1907. And it's a cartoon and a story we're all familiar with entitled Injun Summer. A little bit of the vernacular of the time. I'll try to read that. Injun Summer. Yep, sonny, this is sure enough Injun Summer. Don't know what that is? I reckon, do you? Well, that's when all the homesick Injuns come back to play. You know, a long time ago, long afore your granddaddy was born even, there used to be heaps of Injuns around here. Thousands, millions, I reckon, far as that's concerned. Regular, sure enough, Injuns. None of your cigar store Injuns, not much. They was all around here, right here where you're standing. Don't be scared. Ain't none around here now, leastways no live ones. They've been gone this many a year. They all went away and died, so they ain't no more left. But every year, long about now, they all come back, leastways their spirits do. They're here now. You can see them off across the fields. Look real hard. See that kind of hazy, misty look out yonder? Well, them's Injuns. Injun spirits marching along and dancing in the sunlight. That's what makes that kind of haze that's everywhere. It's just the spirits of the Injuns all come back. They're all around us now. See off yonder? See them teepees? They kind of look like corn shocks from here, but them's Injun tents, sure as you're a foot high. See them now? Sure. I knowed you could. Smell that smoky sort of smell in the air? That's the campfires a-burning and their pipes a-going. Lots of people say it's just leaves burning, but it ain't. It's the campfires and the Injuns are hopping around to beat the old Harry. You just come out here tonight when the moon is hanging over the hill off yonder and the harvest field is all swimming in the moonlight, and you can see the Injuns and the teepees just as plain as can be. You can, huh? I knowed you would after a little while. Did you ever notice how the leaves turn red about this time of year? That's just another sign of redskins. That's when an old Injun spirit gets tired dancing and goes up and squats on a leaf to rest. Why, I can hear him wrestling and whispering and creeping round among the leaves all the time. And every once in a while, a leaf gives way under some fat old Injun ghost and comes floating down to the ground. See? Here's one now. See how red it is? That's the war paint rubbed off in an Injun ghost. Sure you're born. Pretty soon all the Injuns will go marching away again, back to the happy hunting ground, but next year you'll see them trooping back, the sky just hazy with them, and their campfires smoldering away, just like they are now. Well, of course, that bit of narrative accompanies the great cartoon that John T. McCutcheon drew. And it's two cartoons. You'll see a grandpa and his grandson raking some leaves, and they're looking out into a field with a full moon, an Injun summer type of moon, a harvest moon, looking out at the corn shacks, burning those leaves, and you'll see the smoke from the leaves kind of rising out of the ground. But then, if you look closer, there's that same grandpa and grandson, but those corn shacks turned into teepees. That's what Grandpa says. They're teepees. And that moon is silhouetted right behind all those Injuns dancing around that campfire, which is the leaves burning, with a haze over everything. That's the story of Injun summer, or at least the story that that grandpa told that grandson. Many years ago, on September 30th, 1907. And it's endured many years, of course. The problem was John T. McCutcheon was terminated because he was somewhat critical of the American Indian. But his legacy certainly lives on. In fact, we have a school up in the north side named for John T. McCutcheon. And again, the Dean of American Cartoonists, winning the Pulitzer Prize in 1932. It'll probably be in the newspaper this coming weekend, or certainly the next. But if you have a chance, enjoy the cartoon, and certainly enjoy reading it to your son or kids or grandkids, because it's a great tradition. I have it myself with the kids. One of the influences of John T. McCutcheon was Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, of course, who's familiar with the poem The Song of Hiawatha, which was written 50 years earlier in 1855, and here's a little excerpt from that, always read in a kind of a sing-song. From his pipe the smoke ascending filled the sky with haze and vapor, filled the air with dreamy softness, gave a twinkle to the water, touched the rugged hills with smoothness, brought the tender Indian summer to the melancholy northland in the dreary moon of snowshoes, about the song of Hiawatha. Interesting. And pretty soon we're going to get cold weather. So the Injun summer, I don't think it'll last too much longer, but it's nice to smell that, the leaves. I know it's against the law to burn the leaves, but certainly once in a while it's kind of enjoyable just to get that scent of the burning leaves. You don't have to burn a whole backyard of them, but maybe just a little pile of them, as long as the neighbors don't mind. I want to mention this for our good friend Ann Fink over at Carol Fox. The Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra gives Chicago the chance to preview three orchestral works from its upcoming Orchestra Hall concert in a free one-hour concert at Lincoln Park High School, Sunday, November 4th at 3 o'clock. 123 talented young musicians from the award-winning Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra under the direction of music director Alan Tinkham. And these kids come from all over the area. They come from Addison and Antioch and Arlington Heights and Elmhurst and Downers Grove and Hoffman Estates, LaGrange, Palatine, Park Forest, Vernon Hills, Wheaton, Willowbrook, Winnetka, all over the Chicagoland area. Very, very talented young people. In fact, our good friend Bob O'Sullivan's son is one of the talented musicians in the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra. But they're going to treat Chicagoans to a free one-hour preview performance of three works scheduled to be performed at their upcoming concert, Orchestra Hall, which is going to be on November 11th. Now, they'll be performing in a pre-concert at Lincoln Park High School in their auditorium, 2001 North Orchard Street. And that's Sunday, beginning at 3 o'clock. And for information, you can call 312-939-2207, extension 31, and ask for Amanda. 123 of Chicagoland's best young musicians from the critically acclaimed Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra in a full concert attire performing orchestral works by renowned French composers Saint-Saëns, Poulenc, and Debussy. And then the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra officially opens its 2012-2013 season with a concert at Chicago's Orchestra Hall, 220 South Michigan, right across from the Art Institute, Sunday, November 11th at 7:30, featuring works by renowned French composers Camille Saint-Saëns, Gabriel Fauré, Marcel Poulenc, and Claude Debussy. For the November 11th concert, Chicago Youth Symphony's orchestras will be joined by Roosevelt University Chicago College of the Performing Arts Conservatory Chorus and Chorale for Poulenc's Gloria and Ferré's Les Jeans. Coloratura soprano Elizabeth Norman will also join the orchestra. So for information for the orchestral performance at Orchestra Hall, call 312-294-3000. But very talented young people, and those are the people you're going to be seeing in the Chicago Symphony in years to come, and all the symphonies in and around Chicago. We have the opportunity, of course, of serving on the board of Roosevelt University Chicago College of the Performing Arts, and a lot of these young people have come from the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra, the students, and they moved on to great and very productive careers, and very honored to be able to talk about that. Alan Tinkham, we've had on the show before, and certainly does a terrific job with the young people as they go through adolescence, but with an instrument, which is keeps them out of trouble, very frankly. And that's a good thing. So we're happy to say whatever we can about the Chicago Youth Symphony Orchestra and help out our good friend Ann Fink. Of course, again, the phone number for their office is 312-939-2207, extension 31. Ask for Amanda. Interesting show today. Lots of very interesting guests, and certainly we might as well get right to it, very frankly. And let's start with a little music from Tony Bennett from his CD, Perfectly Frank, which he sings his good friend Frank Sinatra songs. A classic, one of my favorites, A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. We'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
When true lovers meet in Mayfair, so the legends tell, songbirds sing, winter turns to spring. Every winding street in Mayfair falls beneath the spell. I know such enchantment can be, 'cause it happened one evening to me. That certain night, the night we met, there was magic abroad in the air. There were angels dining at the Ritz, and the nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I may be right, I may be wrong, but I'm perfectly willing to swear that when you turned and smiled at me, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. The moon that lingered over London town, poor puzzled moon, he wore a frown. How could he know we two were so in love? Dawn world seem upside down. The streets of town were paved with stars. It was such a romantic affair. And as we kissed and said goodnight, the nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. Step was just as light as the tap dancing feet of a stair, and like an echo far away, a nightingale sang in Berkeley Square. I know, 'cause I was there that night in Berkeley Square. Was there.
Tony Bennett, A Nightingale Sang in Berkeley Square. We're back in the Kevin Moore Show. Aurora's Paramount Theater to stir the soul with another blockbuster Broadway series in 2012-2013 with four fresh new productions of Grease, Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. The Paramount Theater in downtown Aurora wowed critics, audiences, and skeptics alike with last year's successful launch of its first-ever self-produced Broadway subscription series, hitting it out of the ballpark and halfway to Egypt, said the Chicago Tribune, with smash-hit musical productions of My Fair Lady, One of the best I've ever seen. Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, A Chorus Line, and Hair. And now, its nearly 13,000 inaugural subscribers will be able to enjoy the four exciting musicals on tap for the theater's second spectacular Broadway season. Grease, which is closed, a big hit, Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. We have three simple goals at the Paramount. Produce awe-inspiring Broadway productions with our own unique take, provide unmatched personal service to our subscribers, and offer it all at the most affordable rate of any theater in Chicagoland, said Paramount Executive Director Tim Rader. We will continue to challenge ourselves to raise the bar artistically in Season 2. And on the line with us right now is the businessman, entrepreneur, nationally recognized consultant, and authority in the field of fine arts venues, having been involved with the Arlington Heights Metropolis Performing Arts Center, Wheaton Grand Theater, Genesee Theater, and the Highland Park Theater, one of the brightest stars in the world of performing arts theaters and entertainment venues, and the executive director of the historic Paramount Theater, now presenting the Paramount Spectacular 2012-2013 Broadway season and beyond, our good pal, Mr. Timmy Rader. Timmy, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hey, Kevin. You make me sound so important. That's great.
You're very important. You're the most important person out in the western suburbs. A Broadway season, which is another blockbuster. I said it before, My Fair Lady had to be one of the best productions I've ever seen in my life, and I've seen Rex Harrison in it.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. We've heard that from a lot of folks. They really seemed to connect with this particular show, just loved it. And part of it was, I think, they just weren't expecting to have such a quality show out here in the western suburbs.
And I don't want to limit it to that, because the other shows, Joseph and Chorus Line and Hair, they were terrific. You had a great response for Grease here just a few weeks ago, and coming up is Annie.
Yeah, and I'm not just saying this. I think it's going to be the best show yet. I've been sitting in on some rehearsals just this morning. We started everything on Tuesday. Annie is absolutely adorable. We have Gene Wygant as our Daddy Warbucks. I mean, this cast is phenomenal. We have the full orchestration, all professionals. It is going to be absolutely lavish, heartfelt, just a wonderfully rich production. It's one of those shows that, you know, when you're sitting here, everything seems to be coming together. The design team's working,
sure.
The creative team is all gelling, and everything is just kind of, it's almost too good to be true at this point, which is not, you know, I don't say this about every show. It's actually coming together. It's really, really exciting.
Well, of course, Gene is one of Chicagoland's great actors. He played Wicked for so many years, and
right.
as the Wizard, and of course he was in Working. We've had him on the show many times, and your director, who we've just had on a few weeks ago, Rachel Rockwell, one of the premier directors in the Chicagoland area. You can't go wrong, Timmy.
No, she pulls everyone together. She pulls the best design team together, the actors, the musicians. She makes them do their best work, and that's why it's so exciting to have her here.
And Annie hasn't been around in a while. You know, one time, you know, every time you turn around, there's another Annie somewhere. But Annie hasn't been around for a while, so it'd be a nice opportunity for people to revisit that great musical.
It's really a fantastic. A lot of people see this, and they see it in community theater, high school, or maybe it's just their church or whatever it might be. To do this show really well is really hard. I mean, this is a fantastically complicated show. The music and the depth that it actually has to make it work on stage, to do it well is really hard to do. And that's why I think people are going to see. They're going to see a show that is not normally done all that well, and they're going to see it done really well here.
And you know what's great about it also, Timmy, is the fact that you can bring the whole family to see it. If you're going to introduce a young person to theater or to musical theater, this is a great musical theater piece to introduce them to.
Absolutely. They'll be able to connect with Annie. I know I remember seeing the movie when I was a kid. That was my first experience with Annie, and then I saw the musical later on. It's a moving piece.
And, of course, the next one coming up is one of my favorites. Of course, Meredith Willson's great, The Music Man.
Yeah, and that one also is directed by Rachel Rockwell, and it's really shaping up to be spectacular. Just the phenomenal cast. And then we move right into the final performance of the year with Fiddler, with Jim Cordy directing that. It's an exciting season. We're actually almost, and I don't think we've told you this, we're almost at 19,000 subscribers.
Oh, you know, I have 13 on the...
Well, that's what we had last year. Yeah, we have just exploded. I mean, people are really responding to the quality of the show and the value that we give.
That's terrific. And they come from all over. They come not only from the Chicagoland area or Illinois. They come from different states.
They do. We have a subscriber from Cherokee, Iowa. And she comes. She drives.
Well, there's not so much theater in Cherokee, Iowa to go to, actually.
No, I suppose not. So I grew up in Iowa, so I can't say anything bad.
Okay.
There's not a whole lot of theater.
You know, it's terrific. And there were some doubters a few years ago when you were came up with this idea, and you put together a staff that's second to none. Of course, our good pal Jimmy Jarvis is over there with you now and doing great things. Jim Cordy, one of the most talented guys in Chicagoland theater as a choreographer, as a director, as an artistic director, as an actor himself. What a great team you have.
They are the best, and that's what we want to be. We want to be the best musical theater producer in Chicago and do things that nobody else is doing, do shows in ways that nobody else can do. We've got a beautiful house. We've got a great team. There's no reason why we can't be doing the best theater that you can see.
How many people fit in the house?
We can fit almost 1,900.
Okay. And when you have these Broadway shows, they're pretty well packed.
Yeah, they really are. I mean, we've went from, some modest houses, 700, 800, 900 the first season on average to, we're averaging 1,100, 1,200, 1,300
Wow.
Right now. And so, you know, we've got lots of good seats still available. This particular production of Annie, we've extended 3 weeks, so we've got great seats for those last 3 weeks of the run. It's going to fill up because it's the holidays. It's the perfect thing to do when people are not in school and kids aren't in school. Take them out, take them to a show, and take them to a show that's affordable for a change versus going downtown.
So it runs from November 21st till when?
December 30th.
Oh, that's terrific. That's a great holiday theater to enjoy.
Absolutely, yeah.
That's really nice. How do you pick them? How do you choose which musicals to produce?
Well, it's pretty complicated, and I wish I could take full credit for it, but it starts really with checking with what is available from the licensing companies.
Sure.
Then we take that to our subscribers and ask them, hey, what would you like to see? And we try to narrow that down. And then we try to provide a nice mix of shows, something that we think will represent a different types of shows. And, this season is going to be very different from next season. Next season we're already looking at some very very exciting titles, and we're actually even looking at 14-15 right now, and it's going to be, right now we're focusing a lot on the musicals that people have fallen in love with already, shows that have proven themselves, and we're not taking a lot of risks on a lot of new shows.
Yeah.
That's going to change. Next season we're actually, we're going to be the Chicago professional premiere of a particular title that I won the Tony in 2009, I believe it was. Maybe it was 10, but it was. So we're going to actually, we're going to be venturing out and doing some different things in the near future.
You know, you and I have known each other for many years when you were at the Metropolis Performing Arts Center, of course, and Jimmy Jarvis was over there. And I was telling Jay Kelly, of course, the great publicist that works with you, that's where I first met you guys when he was representing the Metropolis years ago. Here you are achieving success. Where do you move on from here? What's your thoughts as far as for yourself or for the Paramount?
Well, this place has a lot of room to continue to expand. I think that even though we've come a long way and we've more than doubled our audience from our best season ever, and we still have a lot of things that we can do. This next summer we're going to be operating and managing River Edge Park, which is a new outdoor music pavilion in downtown Aurora, and the capacity of between 8,500 and 10,000 people. So that's our next big endeavor, is actually coming up and trying to figure out exactly how that's going to serve the public. And that's what we're working on right now, at the same time trying to do everything else we normally do, which is great theater, great concerts, comedians, and all of our educational outreach and everything else that we do here, which is just, the organization's exploding. It's a great place to be, and we're still just at the beginning of where we can be. Eventually, we're gonna have titles that go to Broadway. We're going to have titles that tour the nation, and it's just the very beginning of what we're going to do in the next 3, 4, 5 years.
That's just awesome. Of course, this weekend, the Indigo Girls come in, and Olivia Newton-John the weekend after.
That's right. And those shows are almost sold out right now. We do still have a few seats available, but they're going pretty quick.
Coming up, you have shows around the holidays, Under the Street Lamp for New Year's Eve, our good pal Michael Ingersoll, right? Exactly, yeah.
Yeah, he's coming back. He's bringing the stars of the Chicago production of Jersey Boys here to do some Rat Pack favorites, a lot of stuff from, you know, Frankie Valli from the show, and it's going to be a really great time, a great way to celebrate the New Year's Eve holiday.
And Bill Shatner will be there.
Bill Shatner coming. My old friend Bill.
So very happy for what you guys are doing and the success you had, and you certainly deserve it. I know Annie's going to be a big hit, as the Music Man, as is Fiddler on the Roof, and on, and whatever we can do to get the word out, but my pal, you know we're here for you.
Well, I appreciate that, Kevin. That's really great.
Celebrating its 81st season in 2012-2013, the Paramount Theater is the Center for Performing Arts, Entertainment, and Arts Education in Aurora, the second largest city in Illinois. Named one of Chicago's top 10 attended theaters by the League of Chicago Theaters, the almost 1,900-seat Paramount Theater, located in the heart of downtown Aurora at 23 East Galena Boulevard, attracts an annual audience of more than 150,000 and is nationally renowned for the quality and caliber of its presentation, superb acoustics, and historic beauty. The Paramount Theater continues to expand its artistic and institutional boundaries under the guidance of Executive Director Tim Rader, Artistic Director Jim Cordy, a dedicated Board of Trustees, and a devoted staff of live theater professionals. Aurora's Paramount Theater to stir the souls with another blockbuster Broadway series in 2012-2013 with four fresh new productions of Grease, which is closed, Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. On the line with us right now is our good pal, the Executive Director of the Paramount Theater, Timmy Rader. Timmy, maybe a phone number or website for people if they'd like to get some information or become another one of the many subscribers?
Absolutely. Our website is ParamountAurora.com, and our phone number is 630-896-6666.
Always a pleasure, my pal. You tell my good buddy Jim Jarvis I said hello.
I will, absolutely.
And we will look forward to seeing you at Annie.
Thank you, Kevin. I can't wait to see you.
Thanks, Tim. Tim Rader, one of the great guys in Chicago theater, certainly a very talented man. He has done wonders and continues to do wonders out in Aurora. And, of course, after the great season that he had last year with My Fair Lady, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, A Chorus Line, and Hair, and now this season, Grease just closed. It was a great success. Annie, The Music Man, and Fiddler on the Roof. You know, another great season for the people out in Aurora and all the people that enjoy great musical theater. So we certainly look forward to continuing our conversation with Timmy, and Jim Jarvis is out there from the Metropolis Performing Arts Center contributing to the great success. Great place to be. For information, again, 630-896-6666. First Folio Theater presents The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, an original play by Executive Director David Rice. This critically acclaimed production first premiered in 2006 and sold out the entire run. The riveting tale of life and death, love and heartbreak runs through November 4th. The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, is directed by Michael Goldberg and stars Christian Grey as Edgar Allan Poe. This original work by David Rice, who received a Jeff Award nomination for the new adaptation in 2007, is based on the life and writings of the famed author. Poe's macabre and melancholic tales and poems come to life in this mesmerizing play called A Smart and Heartfelt Journey by the Chicago Tribune and a masterful take on the master's work by the Daily Herald. During the course of The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, Poe and his wife, Virginia, guide the audience from room to room through historic Maze Lake Hall, taking them from the garrets to the dungeons and deep into the madness of Edgar Allan Poe. David Rice's artfully structured journey into the life and literature of the great American horror writer focuses with sorrowful clarity on Poe's overwhelming obsession with his wife, Virginia, who died of tuberculosis at age 24. Poe married her when she was 13 and he was 27. On the line with us right now is the award-winning actor who has appeared on the stages of Bailiwick Theater, Bill Pulinski's Candlelight Dinner Playhouse, Marriott Lincolnshire, and the Organic Theater. David starred in Jim Cordy's inaugural production of My Fair Lady at the Paramount Theater in Aurora and was a four-time winner on the hit show Jeopardy. The executive director and co-founder with his wife, Allison Vesely, of First Folio Theater, now presenting The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, through November 4th at the First Folio Theater at the Maze Lake Peabody Estate, 1717 West 31st Street in Oak Brook, our good friend, Mr. David Rice. David, welcome to the Kevin Moore Show.
Thank you, Kevin. What a delight to be back with you.
Well, it's my pleasure, and congratulations on the great success of The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe again.
Well, thank you. We are indeed gratified that the audiences have enjoyed it as much this time around as they have in the past.
You know, very fascinating man, Edgar Allan Poe. Of course, we know him for his tales of mystery and the macabre and so forth, but he was one of the earliest practitioners of the short story. In fact, kind of started out the idea of the detective fiction genre and even delved into a little bit of science fiction.
Yes, indeed. He wrote for a living, and in those days, it was a matter of quantity as well as quality. So he wrote anything and everything that he thought he could sell, including early science fiction and a lot of literary criticism. Of course, known mostly for his tales of the macabre and his poems like The Bells and The Raven. But you're right, he is pretty much always credited as having invented what we now know as the detective story. Prior to Poe, there were no stories that had the kind of person that we think of as a detective, and he pretty much set it up the way that we expect it to be now, with the unofficial detective who's got a sidekick helping him, and the police think he's wrong, and then he proves the police wrong. And it's pretty clear that his characters were actually part of the inspiration for Arthur Conan Doyle's creation of Sherlock Holmes.
Well, interesting, because he did influence Arthur Conan Doyle, and he certainly influenced even Jules Verne, and yet some people consider him a depraved, drunk, drug-addled madman, and maybe because of the way his life kind of turned. You see, especially in this situation with Virginia, who was his cousin. He married her when she was 13, and he was 27, and she, of course, dies of consumption a few years later, and kind of all of his recurring theme is the death of a beautiful woman, maybe starting with the relationship we had with his mother, now with his Virginia, who lost.
Absolutely. Poe experienced an incredible amount of tragedy in his life. First of all, his own mother died of, well, we call it tuberculosis. They called it consumption in those days. But his own mother died when he was just 3 years old of consumption. Later on, his older brother died of consumption. Poe, by this time, had been taken in by one of his mother's best friend as a sort of a stepmother. And when he was about 18 years old, this stepmother died of consumption. And then, of course, as is well known by most people, his own wife, Virginia, eventually died of consumption. And consumption, tuberculosis, is a horribly wasting disease that takes years to take someone's life. And just a horrific thing to spend your life basically time after time watching everyone you love die of the same disease.
Had you always been interested in Edgar Allan Poe, which kind of precipitated writing this play about him?
Absolutely. I was fascinated by Poe the author and Poe the man back when I was in high school. When I was a high school teacher, I taught Poe and enjoyed teaching his stories all the time. So a few years back when we were looking for a show to do that used this beautiful mansion that we're in, we came up with the idea, my wife and I together, of doing a show about Edgar Allan Poe and using the mansion as sort of an extra character.
Well, it's a kind of a Gothic mansion, and Poe wrote in the American literary romantic Gothic dark romanticism kind of movement, so it kind of all fits into place with the trap doors and the trap stairs and everything else that kind of wind around the estate.
Absolutely. The setting is perfect, and if I had searched around for a better place, I don't think I would have been able to find
it. Well, I tell you what, everybody's been searching for tickets, and they can't seem to get them because it's been such a great success. I congratulate you on that.
Yeah, it has been pretty much a sellout from day one, and we are very gratified, that's for sure.
What's the response of, especially around Halloween now, of course, timing is everything, what's the response of the audience been? Do they, of course, you don't have any, but you don't have a guillotine that comes down at somebody during the course of the travels that you go through the mansion, but certainly you get that feeling, that eerie feeling as you go from room to room.
Well, we've got a great lighting designer and a great sound designer who have really created incredible effects within the rooms, especially for some of the stories, such as The Pit and the Pendulum. There are moments in The Pit and the Pendulum when the audience is plunged into total darkness, the same as the prisoner, and they actually do hear the pendulum, this razor-sharp axe, passing over their heads from left to right and back and forth and coming inexorably closer to them. And I have had a number of patrons who have told me that it was one of the most frightening theatrical experiences they've ever had.
Really? You know, you're like the Vincent Price of Oakbrook.
Oh, wow. I wish I was as good as Vincent Price, but I'll sure take that as an incredible compliment.
Well, I'm remembering that the movie, The Pit and the Pendulum, when he was in that and the other Poe, you know, movies that he was involved in. Oh. And, you know, you mm-hmm. always look at Vincent Price, and that's who you think of.
Oh, absolutely. It's hard to separate Poe and Vincent Price after all the things he did, The Telltale Heart and The Raven, and even a movie called Ligeia, one of his lesser-known ones,
sure.
But it was based on a short story and one that we use within The Madness of Poe.
Has it been a lot of fun for you?
It's been a riot. I've always loved this show. This is the fourth time we've produced it since we originated in 2006. And I've had three different actors playing Poe and two different directors, and it's just always a joy because everybody has a fun time doing it, and my audiences all have such a great time watching it.
You know, David, around Christmas time, we always have all the productions, various productions of A Christmas Carol. Now, this has become a tradition, a legacy. You have to continue. Every year you're going to have to bring around Halloween. You have to bring back The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe.
We have certainly, as I said, this is the fourth time we've done it. We will almost assuredly do it again, although not every year. I kind of find that it stays a little more special if we only do it every 2 or 3 years and also frees up some other things on our schedule for other plays in between.
Well, you got to sharpen up that pendulum. That's what, that's what you have to do. And, of course, after this serious play coming up for First Folio is something a little lighter, Jeeves Takes a Bow.
Yes, we definitely do a 180-degree turn in our season, moving from this, which is our single most popular show ever, to the Jeeves trilogy. This is the third story about the dim-witted Bertie and his great butler Jeeves, who gets him out of trouble. And the past two stories about Jeeves and Bertie Wooster have also been amongst our greatest successes, both critically and in terms of total audience attendance. So sales are already skyrocketing for that one, too.
Well, that's terrific. You know, I just had Timmy Rader, of course, the executive director of the Paramount Theater, on the show here
yep.
a few moments ago, and he says he needs you back on the stage now. Enough of this directing stuff. You got to get back on the stage like you did before.
I would love to work with Tim Rader and Jim Cordy again. They are two of the best people in show business there. Not only a great producer and director team, but they're just two of the nicest guys out there. There's no questions about it. They've got a great operation there at Paramount.
You know, great success they've had, and certainly great success that you've had, you and Allison have. Has it become all that you expected?
It really has. We have been extremely fortunate that the theater has grown over the years and that we have been able to attract really so many talented actors and designers and other directors in addition to my wife, and it built up quite a reputation here, including winning a couple of Jeff Awards at the most recent Jeff Awards ceremony.
Congratulations on that.
We're pretty proud.
Yeah, that's terrific. That's terrific. First Folio Theater is entering its 16th season of bringing high-quality performances of Shakespeare and other classics to the stage. During that time, the theater has expanded from an annual summer production to a year-round operation with three separate and distinct stages at the historic Maze Lake Peabody Estate. The Shakespeare Book of Lists names First Folio Theater one of the 150 great places to see a Shakespeare play. All performances take place at the Maze Lake Peabody Estate, located at 1717 West 31st Street, off Route 83 in Oakbrook. First Folio Theater presents The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, an original play by executive director David Rice. This critically acclaimed production first premiered in 2006 and sold out the entire run. The riveting tale of life and death, love and heartbreak runs through November 4th. The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, is directed by Michael Goldberg and stars Christian Grey as Edgar Allan Poe. And on the line with us right now is David Rice. David, maybe a phone number or website if people would like to get some information about the First Folio?
Absolutely. Everything they could possibly need to know is on our website, which is at firstfolio.org. That's O-R-G. And if they go there, they can get a full calendar of all of our events, all of our performances, and then directions to the theater, anything else they might need to know. But if they want to give us a call, they can call us at 630-986-8067. and we'll be glad to answer their questions as well.
Always a pleasure, my pal. Give our best to Allison. Continued success, and we'll look forward to Jeeves.
Thank you, Kevin. We appreciate your having me on and all the support that you've given to First Folio. You got a great show.
Always a pleasure. Thank you, my pal.
Bye-bye.
Take care. David Rice with his lovely wife, Allison Vesely, the founders of First Folio Theater, now presenting The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, through November 4th. And it's tough to get tickets, so you better get on it right away at the First Folio Theater at the Maze Lake Peabody Estate, 1717 West 31st in Oak Brook. For information, 630-986-8067. Very, very talented man doing some great things. Well, we're going to get back to Tony Bennett's CD, singing his friend Frank Sinatra's greatest hits, entitled Perfectly Frank. Wonderful song, Time After Time, written by Sammy Kahn and Jules Stein. And we'll be back on The Kevin Moore Show.
Time after time, I tell myself that I'm so lucky to be loving you. So lucky to be the one you run to see in the evening when the day is through. I only know what I know. Passing years will show. You've kept my love so young, so new. And time after time, you'll hear me say that I'm so lucky to be loving you.
Steppenwolf for Young Adults brings One Book, One Chicago Selection, The Book Thief, to the Upstairs Theater through November 11th. Hallie Gordon directs a cast of 13 in Heidi Stillman's world premiere adaptation of Marcus Zusak's best-selling novel as part of Citywide Now is the Time initiative. The Book Thief is staged by Hallie Gordon in partnership with Chicago Public Library's One Book, One Chicago and the Citywide season-long Now is the Time initiative with the Chicago Public Library. Facing history in ourselves and other local cultural organizations. The Book Thief runs through November 11th. Liesl Memminger is a young girl struggling to survive in Nazi Germany. Her life is filled with risk and danger, but her love of books guides her through a brutal world. Death watches over her, fascinated by humankind's will to live. The Book Thief looks at the terrible cost of violence, bearing witness to our compassion and complicity. When death tells a story, you listen. In recent years, violence towards youth has become overwhelming, comments director Haley Gordon. As theater artists, we work with students scared to play outside, scared to travel to school, scared because they face torment at school from bullying. Therefore, we've engaged with the Chicago Public Library, Facing History and Ourselves, and other theaters and cultural organizations for Now is the Time, a season-long partnership inspiring positive change in our great city. And on the line with us right now is the Managing Artistic Director, teacher, director of Steppenwolf Young Adults Program, award-winning producer, one of the brightest stars in the world of Chicago theater, and the director of the world premiere stage adaptation of the best-selling novel, The Book Thief, now extended through Sunday, November 11th at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater, 1650 North Halsted, our good friend, Haley Gordon. Haley, welcome back to the Kevin Moore Show.
Hi, Kevin. So glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Always a pleasure, and congratulations on this this great adaptation of The Book Thief. What a powerful novel for not only young people, but for everyone, and it's certainly translated into a great play on stage.
Thank you. Yes, we're incredibly excited, and it is one of those books for your listeners who've read it that seems very daunting to adapt for the stage, but Heidi Stillman, who's the adapter and ensemble member at Looking Glass Theater, did an absolutely fantastic job with it.
Interesting question it asks, Haley. Should we mind our own business? Should we fight openly or covertly? When are the circumstances so extreme that you must say something, and even if it comes to a great personal cost? You know, I look back at myself sometimes, Haley, and I remember one time in particular. I was kind of somewhat of a hoodlum when I was younger, of course, but grew up on the South Side. But I remember one time there was bullying going on, and I should have stood up for something, and I didn't. And it just kind of, I remember that all the time. It's the only time it happened, but I remember that particular time. And that's going on now, especially when we pick up the newspapers every day. And it doesn't have to. All you have to do is be that person that stands up and says, okay, enough.
That's right, but that's really difficult, and history has actually shown us how difficult that is. We actually had that discussion this afternoon with our student audience, is the idea that what I hope people will walk away with from watching this play is the idea that, you know, you're in the process of creating your own story, making your own history, and what do you want to say about that? Because it's your choice, and do you want to live with regrets? Or do you want to be the person that stands up in the face of something that is incredibly hard and challenging?
For our listeners, just kind of give an overview of the story, because the story is as I said before, very powerful.
Mm-hmm. The story is about first of all, the story is narrated by Death, which mm-hmm. is one thing that I was really interested in and fascinated by. And part of the story is his journey of trying to find out why human beings matter. And the other part, and through this, kind of through his journey, he comes across this story, The Book Thief, which is a story written by this young girl, Liesl Memminger, who lives with foster family members during World War II in Nazi Germany. And they're a non-Jewish family, and they decide to hide a Jew in their basement. And it's really about their family being upstanders, knowing that this is the right thing to do, knowing in their hearts, knowing that they're jeopardizing their lives, the lives of the people that they're friends with, but knowing it's the right thing to do. And I think what Death is trying to say to us in those moments is, how can we as human beings be capable of so much beauty and so much love, and as well as so much horror? And so much tragedy.
And certainly a time, the Nazi occupation, certainly a time when we saw that. Interesting that the author, Marka Zusek, is this almost autobiographical in that? Was this about his mother that he was writing about?
These are stories that he compiled from the storytelling of his mother, yes. Mm-hmm. So some of these stories are actual stories that his parents went through, and that's really what kind of got him really interested in telling this story. And actually, we were lucky enough to have him here in the audience and wow. to lead a post-show discussion after he saw the play. And he said, He said he wished his parents could see it. He said it really brought him home again. And it very much is about storytelling as well and how important that is to us as humans.
You know, one of the lines, of course, from Death is, I am haunted by humans. I'm
right.
not so sure that isn't one of the lines that the humans are thinking, that they're not haunted by humans. Certainly at this time in history, they were. And the process of telling the stories, that's how we carry on that tradition. And you do that so very well, because that's what you're doing in your young adults program. You did so well with just thinking of the ones in the past, To Kill a Mockingbird mm-hmm. and Tired as a Lonely Hunter, and you continue to do that. Do you find that you're touching these young people? Do you get a visceral, energetic, enthusiastic response from these kids?
Oh, yeah. I wouldn't keep doing it if I didn't. I mean, that's the most interesting thing, is that I feel like they're so underestimated by adults in their lives. And even, like, you know, it's just so interesting how, you know, the play's a two-hour play, and, you know, a lot of and the play's been very well reviewed, but some critics said, wow, this must be a lot for a high school student to sit through a two-hour play. And that just reads to me like, gosh, you really don't get these kids. Like, they're hungry for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, because of the post-show discussions that we have after each performance, I mean, these kids are incredibly moved. We have this one student who said, you know, I've been taught the Holocaust in school and I've read about it, but I've never felt it until now. And it's like, we need to give these kids a place to experience that.
I would imagine those post-show discussions must be, you know, very very touching.
They're amazing. And again, I say that's exactly why I keep doing what I'm doing, for who I'm doing it for, because they have the opportunity to change the world. You know, I'm way too old to be doing that at this point. But if I can get someone their age to do it, then I've done my job, and I've done it pretty well.
On the contrary, Haley Gordon's doing that every time she puts on a play at Steppenwolf. She's changing the world. And certainly these young people, you know, we read in high school, they have to read The Diary of Anne Frank. Of course, that's kind of a de rigueur type of book that everybody's on all the book lists. Is this a book that could supplement that or replace it?
I don't know if it could replace it. I think it's a wonderful book to have alongside of it, because it's from a different perspective. Again, it's from a non-Jewish mm-hmm. perspective, being a part of that environment and what the telling of the good and the evil that was actually going on during that time, because there was good, there were good people. And I think that, I mean, it is on the Common Core reading list for high school students. So I think a lot of our students who come see this have read the book. It's part of their curriculum. So I do think it is gaining that traction, definitely.
All of the performances are sold out, are they not?
They are sold out, but I would recommend for your listeners who are interested, there are always seats available the day of,
mm-hmm.
and to please try and make it, because it really is a moving experience.
Why not? Is it just logistics, Haley, that you can't keep this going for more than November 11th and pick it up where more of the students come or more in the schools can be exposed to this?
It is logistics. It's, you know, it's calendar scheduling.
Yeah.
It's everybody. You know, it's hopefully if we get enough interest, maybe it will have another life beyond this year. But, yeah, it is just logistics.
Well, what's next up for Haley Gordon?
Oh, I don't know. we're creating this play around. We've gone out into the city over the past 2 years with, we have a partnership with DePaul University, and
mm-hmm.
we've been collecting oral histories around youth violence. And so we are making that a play that will run at Steppenwolf in February, and then we'll go out into 5 different libraries throughout the whole city.
That's nice. I got a press release. Are you still involved with Theater in the Lake?
I'm not.
Oh, okay.
I'm not.
Okay.
I know. Yeah. I just couldn't handle all. I couldn't handle all the work.
Too much stuff to do.
Yeah, but they have a great program now with 2 different curators each year. You know, bringing in their expertise. So I think they're doing a really great job.
Well, you had done such a terrific job, and we're going to miss you over there, certainly
for
the
you.
Summer. The Book Thief is, as its core, a story that deals with the profoundly complex subject of how people behave when subjected to immense stress and terror, how they deal with fear, how they live with secrets and cope with grief, how they respond to evil, how they respond to words, and how their essential natures are not so much altered as magnified. Steppenwolf for Young Adults' unique approach combines play production with educational components to enhance arts education for young audiences as well as their teachers and families. Steppenwolf for Young Adults creates two full-scale professional productions each season specifically for teens. Working closely with the Chicago Public and Metropolitan Area Schools and other community partners, Steppenwolf for Young Adults annually ensures access to the theater for more than 12,000 participants from Chicago's diverse communities. The initiative also includes a post-show discussions with artists, classroom residencies led by Steppenwolf-trained teaching artists in more than 30 classrooms in 12 public high schools, professional development workshops for educators, and the Young Adult Council, an innovative year-round after-school initiative that uniquely engages high school students in all areas of the theater's operations. Steppenwolf for Young Adults brings One Book, One Chicago selection, The Book Thief, to the Upstairs Theater through November 11th. Haley Gordon directs a cast of 13 in Heidi Stillman's world premiere adaptation of Marka Zusak's best-selling novel as part of Citywide Now is the Time initiative. And on the line with us right now is our good friend Haley Gordon. Haley, maybe a phone number or website if people like to get some information?
Yeah, absolutely. They can call our box office at 312-335-1650. Or our website is steppenwolftheater.org.
Always a pleasure, kiddo. Continued success, and let's keep on each other's radar.
Thank you so much. Good to talk to you.
Thanks, Haley.
Bye.
Bye-bye, Haley Gordon. One of the brightest stars in the world, Chicago Theater, as I said before, director of the world premiere stage adaptation of the best-selling novel, The Book Thief, now extended through Sunday, November 11th at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater, 1650 North Halsted. For information, 312-335-1650. Always a pleasure having Haley on. She does such great things with the Young Adults program at Steppenwolf and continues the legacy of bringing young people into the theater. Well, that about does it for our show today. I thank you for sharing this last hour with me and hope your listeners have enjoyed this time as much as I have. Especially like to thank our guest, Timmy Rader, the executive director of the historic Paramount Theater, now presenting the Paramount Spectacular 2012-2013 Broadway season and beyond. And, of course, great success with they had with Grease, coming up Annie, then The Music Man, and finally finishing the season with Fiddler on the Roof from March 6th to the 24th. And Indigo Girls this weekend, Olivia Newton-John's coming up next weekend. Always doing wonderful things out at the Paramount Theater. For information, 630-896-6666. David Rice, co-founder with his wife Allison Vesely of First Folio Theater, now presenting The Madness of Edgar Allan Poe, a love story, through November 4th at the First Folio Theater at the Mays Lake Peabody Estate, 1717 West 31st Street in Oak Brook. For information, 630-986-8067. Jeeves is coming up next, so that should be a lot of fun. And finally, our good friend Haley Gordon, the director of the world premiere stage adaptation of the best-selling novel, The Book Thief, now extended through Sunday, November 11th at Steppenwolf's Upstairs Theater, 1650 North Halsted. For information, 312-335-1650. Haley is doing such terrific things for young people out at the Steppenwolf. Finally, a famous writer once said, one ought, every day at least, to hear a little song, read a good poem, see a fine picture, and if it were possible, to speak a few reasonable words. I hope on our show today we have, at the very least, done just that, spoken a few reasonable words. At that, I'd like to wish everyone a good week, and as that British group once said, and in the end, the love that you take is equal to the love that you make. Have a great day.
I know the way I feel for you, it's now or never. The more I love, the more that I'm afraid. But in your eyes I may not see forever. Forever. Be the best of friends. if we can try with every day to make it better as it grows. Any luck then I suppose. The music